Lee Bevington Media, voiceovers and on-air talent for radio, television and podcasts. Visit leebevington.com.au.
Radio. The transmission and reception of electromagnetic waves on radio frequency,
especially those carrying sound messages,
or the activity or industry of broadcasting sound programs to the public. Fanboy. A male fan,
especially one who behaves in an obsessive or overexcited way.
This is the Radio Fanboy Podcast, and here's your host, Bevo.
Today we're catching up with an industry legend. He is a voiceover artist these days, but gee, he's worked across all the decades. The 80s, 90s, noughties, he's still going. Bernie Britton in Melbourne. G'day, Bernie.
Lee, how are you, old bean?
You're calling me old, eh? My goodness, you have a very impressive resume here. I've jumped onto LinkedIn and I can see that your very first radio gig was in Melbourne, 3AK, and you shared the building with Channel 9. You've got to tell me more about this.
Well, that's all about the Packer relationship. At that time, Kerry or Sir Frankie's old man was still around, I think. Kerry Packer owned 3AK Melbourne as by owning Channel 9, and AK was located in the building at 22 Bendigo Street, Richmond. And so it was the home of Hey Hey, a Saturday on in the mornings back in those days and stuff. And I would go in. I started there when I was 17.
Wow.
In the record library at 3AK. And, you know, whilst there, you know, Daryl Summers, Bert Newton, Don Lane, they're all just walking past you. And, you know, Peter Hitchener and I are still friends today. You know, it's incredible that I was exposed to all of that at such a young age. It was really, really exciting. And on a Saturday morning, when Hey Hey was on a Saturday morning, I would round up my two friends, my two best friends from school, Tony Bird and Peter Melinda, and we'd jump in Tony's old Chrysler and we'd drive into Richmond, and I'd just use my pass, go past the gatehouse, go into Studio 9, and we'd go and sit in the empty audience seats and watch Hey Hey being done.
Oh, that's so cool.
Or we'd go upstairs into the control room and watch Murray Tregoning throwing carts and, you know, into cart machines for sound effects and Blackman in the other studio and yada, yada, yada. Of course, never took a photo, which was just that thing that you never did in those days. But yeah. Just incredible, incredible times. At one occasion, there was a guy called, they used to call him Lucky Phil yes, Lambert, who was the
Lucky
floor manager.
Lucky Phil.
And he's a terrific guy. His wife worked on the show as well. And so Phil came over to us three sitting in the audience seats, and he just said, Daryl wants to do a throw to audience. And they do a thing where they would go, there's our live studio audience. And then the seats are all empty and have this, you know, all the So they spin around. He said, they spin around. You guys be asleep, okay? Well, yeah, sure.
Yep.
So, you know, Summers goes, what about our live studio audio? And he throws the thing over and a big applause, sound effects goes on. And it's Tony, Peter and I just like nodded off in the first three rows or something like that. And then they go, cut. And then Summers would go, cut back, cut back, cut back. You know. Channel 9 was very, very exciting. I love the joint. The Channel 9 canteen is notorious, and people used to send it up all the time. But actually, they made really good food, and I went in there, you know, within a few days of me working there, to get a sandwich. And there was a lovely lady in there called Boya, and she always took care of me and looked after me. And anyway, so one day Don Lane walks in, and Don Lane sort of comes in, and he sort of runs the joint. So he goes behind the counter and starts to prep a sandwich for himself. You know, so he's got the bread out, and he looks at me. He looks at me and he goes, "Am I having ham or turkey, kid? Am I having ham or turkey?" And I go, "Oh, I don't know." I don't even think I answered. I just sort of go, hey. And you know, he's, "I'm going to have turkey. The kid wants me to have turkey. I'm having turkey." And there was these sorts of things happen a lot, and it was mind blowing, but it was really, really exciting. Yeah. I was in the record library. Sorry, I did digress. Let me just quickly explain the record library scenario, Lee, which was, you know, folks listening are kind of going to go, record library. Well, this is this giant thing that had what were called compactors that housed all the albums, all the vinyl, all the any tapes we had, et cetera. They were about 12 feet tall. They were about, how wide, I suppose, you know, two albums wide, I suppose, and they were all on these giant rails, and you would slide them left and right and to go in there, and you'd go up a ladder if you had to get an album from the top, yada, yada, yada. So it was, you know, that's how you kind of put music together back in those days. You know, the music director would sit there with the records stacked up next to the player and listen to stuff to play. And 3AK was a beautiful music station, so everything was super soft and gentle, and, you know, all the announcers spoke like that at 3AK. You know, so it was really, really, you know, but it was beautifully presented. It was an American idea that it worked its brains off, and we were number one so often it was boring, you know. So interesting time. But yes, the whole arrangement with doing up, putting together a program was so bizarre, because that was my first job as a 17-year-old, was sit in the library and then make these programs up. So you'd have these files or bins or, you know, little filing drawers that had white cards, yellow cards, blue cards, and a blue card would represent a male vocal, a pink card represented a female vocal, yada, yada, yada. You were given a format to follow. And pardon me, I would do mid-dawns when I first got there. And, you know, you'd slide the orchestral in for the beginning of the hour at 12 o'clock, followed by, you know, El Martino, followed by something else. And you'd have to be careful to make them move like slow, medium, fast, no, fast into slow. It was incredibly intricate. Something else that 3AK did, which will blow your mind, is Bill Howie, who was a legendary PD there and a great, great man. He had a system of rejecting ads, Lee.
Wow. Now, how did that work?
So, well, an ad would come in and it would go to him first, and it would come down to me when I was in karting by now. It would come down to me in karting, and it'd have an A, B, and C in it. The A would mean it could go to the start of the break. The B would mean it has to be in the break but not at the start. And a C was an outright rejection. It's not going to air.
Oh, right. Okay.
I know. Can you imagine the sales department? And, like, there was an occasion where Diet Coke had started up, like, in 82, and they ran a campaign, and the ad was really bouncy, really heavy. And Bill turned it down, a Coke ad. And, you know, the sales department went, what? And, of course, you know, the agency came to the party and recorded a softer jingle.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
I mean, that's how twisted is that? You know, like, could you imagine a PD now saying, no, we can't put that ad on air, it's too rowdy, you know? It's like, nuts. So times have changed, my friend.
Oh, definitely. I mean, back then the choices on radio were quite limited, so you had that power to knock stuff back, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, all the ads, of course, as you may well know, had to go through Federation of Radio Broadcasters, this thing called FARB, which was really effing peculiar, but we did it, and we would record ads. I ultimately became production manager there, but when I was doing karting, we record ads, and then you would send them via courier to the Federation of Australian Radio Broadcasters office in the city, which I think was in Exhibition Street, and then you would ask the courier to wait for the audition.
Yeah,
of the ad, and then he would bolt back to Channel 9 with the tape going, it's cleared by FARB.
Yeah.
And that, if you were a courier back then, you would have made a packet out of us, because that's what we had to do four or five times a day.
Holy moly, that's crazy.
I know, things have really, really changed, you know. And so the whole idea with Federation of Australian Radio Broadcasters thing, or the FARB stamp, was to make sure that nothing went away that was untoward, yada, yada, yada. So I don't know what she would have – it was a woman that used to judge these. What was she would have considered untoward? I never really found out. But I suppose something highly sexual, maybe. I don't know. But who's going to do that? Who's going to advertise something so provocative and, you know, damaging potentially to your name? I don't know. It's an odd system.
Yes. Very, very interesting, though. I don't think I've spoken to anyone that's mentioned that before, so that's good. That's new material.
Yeah.
You stayed in 3AK for a couple of years, and then your next gig was Shepparton. Tell me about that at 3SR.
Yeah. Shep, I put out a lot of – I did a demo tape at 3AK in production, and I farmed it out everywhere. And then a Shepparton contacted me and said, yeah, we'd like you to, do nights, four nights for us a week. And at the time I was 19 and they said, you're 21, right? And I was like, yep, 21, I am for sure. And for some reason they wouldn't hire anyone that was under 21. So I ended up getting it at age 19 and moving up to Shep and doing nights, which was 7 till 1 a.m. and then the station shut at 1 a.m.
Oh, my God.
And so you would play, a Prince song, you play, play Little Red Corvette, and then you go straight into the Australian National Anthem. And then a voiceover would come over the top, a guy called Laurie Bennett, who is not with us anymore, would sort of say, this is 3SR Radio, Shepparton, we're broadcasting on 3,000 watts and all this sort of stuff. And then you would switch the transmitter off. And the cool thing was we're on 1260 and 2SM, which was such a hot, hot station in the early 80s, was on 1269. So a sudden it'd just boom in once you turned your transmitter off. So I just drive home jiving to everything, what they used to call themselves? Hot Hits. Hot Hits and Cold Cash. And they were astonishing. It sounded so mean and so rocky and, very cool, very cool.
Well, it's cool how it kind of takes over the overnight program, this other station from Sydney.
Yeah, well, it's extraordinary, and it's kind of northern Victoria.
Yeah.
So you do get a bit of Sydney action, but not that much. But it was booming in when you switched it off. It was like, geez. Very cool. So, so Shep was a lot of fun. Was there for 3 years and, really enjoyed it. My friend Steve Woods, who replaced me as production manager at 3AK Melbourne, ended up coming up there himself and being a disc jockey with me there for a few years or a couple of years that I was there. And Steve went on to be the general manager, but you can ask him about that in his own independent podcast with you, Lee.
Sure, we'll do.
I guess. although I must tell you, though, there was something I wanted to mention. Sunday nights on country radio stations, some even still today, but there's religious programs on, right?
Yeah.
And what we used to do was play tapes, and they went for an hour or a half an hour or something, and there was a thing called the Lutheran Hour that went for half an hour.
Yeah.
And I'd put it on at 8 o'clock, and you're sitting there sucking your thumb, I'm smoking a cigarette at the time, what am I going to do? I'm going to get some Chinese. So I call up this place down the road. And at those times, you didn't even think about delivery. Delivery just wasn't something that happened. You just went and got your food,
Yeah.
So I said, I'll have this. So I jumped in the car, and it's Sunday night in Shepparton. There's nobody around. And I drove up the road to this. It's literally two blocks. And I drove up, and I walked in. And he's got us on, and I can hear the Jesus said that the way, the truth, and the light, and you can hear it booming through the shop. And suddenly he goes, and it's like,
oh no.
And the guy in the shops looked at me and gone, that not good? I went, no, that is not good. And I ran, and it's all slow motionly because you that most frightening thing in your life is just happening. And you're like, and I was 19.
Yeah.
And I stuck the car in reverse, and I reversed back through two intersections.
Oh, my God.
Because I didn't know what I didn't know what I was going to encounter. I was completely freaked out. And I remember thinking to myself, if the cops see me do this, I'm just going to say the tape, went wrong on the station. I had to get back or something like that. Yeah. It was the most inane scenario. So I ran in, and of course I hadn't screwed down the tape, so the tape rolled off.
Oh, right.
I had to share that with you.
Yeah. 3UZ was next on the lineup, and was that a country station?
Yeah, mate, it was called Melbourne's Great Country, and I started there in 86 on Mid Dawns, and it was pretty amazing environment. Because it was in the old 3UZ building under Nick Irby and Pete Johns, who about 2 weeks after I started got the flick. And then Rod Stone, who was an XY guy years before, he came over and was the PD and really kind of like pushed the country format, which kind of really didn't sound too bad if you like country music. It was kind of well laid out, but it just didn't work. Didn't work. So I was there about a year and a bit, and then Peter Sinclair over at 3AK, where they'd gone to a what was called a light and lively format, called me and said, do you want to come over? I'm getting rid of Blackman. And it turned out Blackman was doing breakfast that I was doing with Jane Kennedy at 3 Years Ed. That was I was Jane's first on-air partner.
Oh, really?
Back in the day. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Because she was a producer of the morning show for Nick Irby, and then they put on air with me doing breakfast and little magazine-y things with John Deeks at 9 to noon. So I left there. Blackman came over to UZ, and I went over to 3AK and did breakfast over there.
Wow. So you did the full circle. You left AK and you came back to AK.
Yeah. Yeah. Two tours of duty at 3AK there, Lee. And both times, bloody excellent. Just great, 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 great place to be. Loved it. Oh, great story of Sir Frank Packer, you know, Sir Kerry Packer, obviously, and then his father, Frank. Some years ago, I was told the story. It's you know, middle of the day, and it's a two-story building. It had an elevator in it, and Frank's in the elevator. Guy gets in the elevator with Frank, doesn't know who Frank is, and he's just like, Jesus, I hate this joint. It's just, they're such dickheads. No one knows what they're fucking doing. It's bloody, it's just hopeless. They're bloody idiots that run this joint. And he said, what do you get paid? He said, what? He said, what do you get paid? He said, oh, $80 a week, whatever it was in the 70s. And I said, all right. And he pulled out his wallet and he went, dunk, 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 dunk. And he counted off. He said, there's 4 weeks' pay. Get out of my building and piss off.
Wow.
So Frank Packer fires it. So what does this guy do? This guy walks out the front, gets into his telecom van and drives away.
Yeah, okay. Telecom van.
He doesn't work for Channel 9, my friend. Just happens to be mouthing off, and Sir Frank thought he worked for him and ended up paying him out and firing him. So bloody incredible. So I bounce all over the joint there, but Channel 9, 3AK, awesome, lot of fun.
So you spent a few years in Victoria, but then you eventually made your way up to sunny Queensland in the late 80s, I believe, 88, you found yourself at BK.
Yes, I was drawn there by the great Ed Breslin, who was my PD, at 3AK Melbourne.
Yep.
And he said, I'm going up there. Do you want to come up and do mornings? I was like, okay, I'll do that. And at that time, it was kind of an interesting scenario for me, Lee, because I had a little bit of work on. I'd been on Neighbours for a few eps, and I'd done some walk-ons and stuff, and I had an agent in Melbourne, Barry Michael, and I said, I'm going to go to Brisbane. He said, What are you doing that for? You know, because he got me an audition for a game show, all sorts of stuff, and I ended up bolting away from it. So years later, I thought that may have been a good idea to stay in Melbourne at that time because there was some shit going on. But irrespective, I had a great time in Brisbane. Loved Brisbane. Loved the people up there, and the station was dynamite because all the young Oz stereo stations at that time were really charged. You know, there was a huge. I don't know, just a great desire to win. Everyone wanted to be on the SS Excellence with Paul Thompson because Thompson was such a great leader, a great boss, you know. So, yeah, so good old Brizzy, mate. Went to Brizzy, loved it, found the heat a little overwhelming, I must admit, for a Melburnian. But nonetheless, what a great town, man.
BK, was that the building in Campbell Street at Bowen Hills?
Yeah, excuse me, Campbell Street, that's right. I was thinking of Montpellier, but no, yeah, Campbell Street, excuse me. That's right, and it had a really cool building. It had two showers in it.
Seriously? Wow.
Yeah, and I don't know what that was about. Although there may have been suspicious uses for it with regards to extramarital things going on at the station, I understand, years later. But very cool building and, you know, great, you know, and Skippo, Ian Skippo, he's just what a gem of a guy. You know, super funny, great to be around. Him and Jamie Dunn at that time, I Jamie Dunn's great. He's just so bloody funny. And, you know, it was again, like I was saying, it's a when they're brand new in the Oz Stereo group, they're really fired up, you know. Everyone's very, very enthused, you know. So it was a great time.
So from...
Do you know Skip?
Yeah. We've had him on the podcast a few episodes back and had a good old chat about the mustache back in the day and all the stations he's worked on in Brisbane. So.
It did have a porn overtone to it, didn't it?
Totally did.
Oh, man. But he's such a good cat, you know, and he always did his show and it was very inspiring. He always announced standing up.
Yes. And it inspired a lot of people to stand up after that because they're like, what's this guy doing standing up? And, you know, it makes total sense. I mean, voiceover artists all the time stand up and relax the diaphragm.
He was miles ahead of his time in that regard, wasn't he? Like, I often used to think, Jesus, mate, you've got to lean down to push the button and all that stuff. I tried it a couple of times because I was doing mornings there after them. And, maybe I'm too tall. I don't know. It just blew my mind. I was like, oh, bugger this. This is stupid, you know. Yeah. But in reality, yeah, when you're up there, your diaphragm's open and you kind of breathe a bit better. And, yeah, I'm sitting back relaxing on a bed upstairs in the house right now. And, you know, you can kind of feel a relative restriction. And you're also caught between this vibe of like, oh, if I lean right back, I could just sort of nod off, you know.
Pretty much. So, but, yeah, these days actually build desks that, you know, motorized ones that go up and down. So you've got the option of either sitting or standing. But the chairs are more like, what do they call them? Draft chairs where you can kind of sit and stand at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So I think.
And as we're revealing now, Skip was miles ahead of his time, you know.
Yeah, he was.
Good cat.
He's still going strong and doing lots of presentations and hosting things and.
I see him on the old Instagram. Excuse me, and he's still a very active chap. And why wouldn't he be? This is one of these guys going to be 120 years old, you know, and just still belting around because he's always been very fit. He's always eaten the right stuff, and you know, I always remember Greg Smith said to me 100 years ago, you know, keep fit, doing radio. Don't get into habits of like getting fat and crap, you know, and it's true because there are, you know, you need energy. And if you're all wasted trying to carry extra kilos and yada, yada, yada. So yeah, guys like that are very inspiring.
Especially those free food samples that seem to make their way in the kitchens. And when Krispy Kreme opened up, oh my God, there was donuts everywhere.
I mean, you know, harken back to Shepparton days when we opened up a new building and I was there, And across the road, a new McDonald's opened.
Oh, wow. And
I would just call them and they'd come over with bags. And, you know, I mean, I would go to my girlfriend's house with like six or seven Big Macs and some fillet fishes and, you know, and her whole family would be fed. And it was... And they couldn't do enough. And they would throw this stuff at you, you know, like it was always... you know, food and stuff around. It's kind of, it flipped in and out, you know, in the 90s, because when accountants got hold of things, we went, no, wait a minute, we can save money by not doing that. A lot of stuff went away and then it's kind of crept back now, you know, because I think that businesses know that if they do, you know, throw a box of muffins at it or whatever like that, at some stage they're going to say, hey, good old, you know, Molly Muffins, thanks so much for your box this morning. Boom.
Yeah.
You
know.
And away you go.
Costs them next to nothing, and they're getting some advertising happening right there, and an endorsement almost.
Yeah, exactly. It reminds me of Colbert. Stephen Colbert did a commercial for, I think it was Colbert that did it, in the Super Bowl for a bookstore that was like in a tiny little bookstore in Ohio or North Carolina or something like that. And, of course, as a result, she's just been inundated and or you know, she's had to put staff on, yada yada yada. But it's always nice, like a little, you know, a little mom and pop type job, you know, getting ahead is it's always nice to see that.
1990 saw you head over to WA and a station called The Eagle. I didn't even know there was a station called The Eagle, but you're going to have to fill me in here, Bernie.
The Eagles, the football team? What are you – what? And so Smith said, yep, pack your bags. You're going to Perth, Bernie. You're going to Perth. So I went over to The Eagle there, which was 6IX – 1080 on your AM dial. What did they call it? Good times and great rock and roll, I think, when I got there. So I did breakfast there for 6 months.
Yep.
And we went for the license along with PMFM, who ultimately got it, and 94.5, which was 6KY and 6PM. And they got it. And they got it by $3,990, and it's thought that was highly suspect.
Right.
There would be millions of dollars separated by 3,000, and then the station ID, 6PM's ID, 990, tacked onto the end for a bit of – so I don't know. Because it was a Packer-owned organisation, 6PM at that time, I often speculate, and of course I'm speculating, so you know it's all speculation.
Yeah.
That they found out everyone's bids.
Oh, right. Interesting.
You know, and threw a knob on the top, but that's an allegation, and I can't back it up, so I'll just say it and leave it.
Okay. Couple of days. You've been to Perth, and now you're heading over to Adelaide at SAFM. Mm.
Well, what happens in Perth, of course, we don't get the license. And Greg Smith comes in one day and he says, get out your Barbara Streisand records. We didn't get the FM. Oh, shit. Okay. So they disconnected the life support to the Eagle and pushed it out into the Indian Ocean. And I flew to Adelaide to replace the legendary John Vincent.
Yeah.
Okay. Who was, had a lot of health issues through his life and was starting to, advance in that area. And he was only in his late 40s, but, man, he was kind of grey and a bit pollurent and a bit kind of pale. And I you could tell that he wasn't well. So they were saying, look, it's too much for him. Just come over and you do the show with Grant Cameron. And that, I mean, I had the time of my life in Adelaide. I loved being in Adelaide. It was just awesome fun. I was there for 6 years just doing, did breakfast a few times, did drive in the end. But really had a great time. I was single. Like, I was married when we first got there, and I got married and my marriage fell apart in about 18 months. And so I was single for like 5 years there. And I think that was a lot of fun too. Adelaide, SAFM again, because, you're in the, you're in the chamber, you're in the Austereo, this is where everything happens. Smith's down the hall, Thompson's down the hall. I'd finish my shift on a Saturday morning, doing 6 to 10 or something like that, and I'd go over and Thompson would be preparing himself to fly to Sydney to go and negotiate whatever he's doing with Today FM this time or whatever. And, I'd go, Paul, how are you? Oh, Bernie, come in, sit down. Yeah, good to see you. And he's a great, great guy, and that really, really helped with things like morale.
Yeah.
General managers, as a rule, which they don't tend to have many of anymore, which I think is a little bit of a mistake, tend to have that ability to round everybody up and, wind everybody up and point them in the right direction and stuff. And PT, even though he was kind of like the CEO of the group, was also kind of general manager risk with the SAFM brand because it was very important to him, But it was great. Brian Bickmore was there, Carrie's dad.
Oh, of course.
Old Bickles, and great man. And Des De Keen, who, is a legend engineer in Adelaide and was there from the beginning of Double SAFM, I think they called it, when it first started in 80. Des is great story, of course. I call him Desda because when they ran CFM on the Gold Coast in the 80s, they went up there and they programmed it and everything and managed it for whoever owned it. And Stan Wilmot was the owner, and Des got up and did a little speech in front of the class, you know. And then Stan Wilmot jumped on the microphone and said, "Well, I'd like to thank Desda." Because he thought Desda Keen was Desda Keen. But anyway, yeah. So everyone calls him Desda. So long way to a short story.
Right? You mentioned CFM there. That happened to be your next station, and you spent a good year there. You got some good memories, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, look, just what a place. The Gold Coast is just awesome. And it's so it's just – for mine, and I know that you're a brizzy fellow at the moment, you know, better temperature on the Gold Coast for me. Like it's about 5-10 off the temp in Brisbane, and you know, beautiful sea breeze. And at that time, it was really starting to boom, but it's not booming like it is now. Or what, you know, as it were, everything's relative, I suppose. But at that time, it was quite busy and stuff, but it was a really cool place to live. You know, I had an apartment on Broadbeach on the 30th floor.
Wow, that's awesome.
And it was 30A, so that was absolute beachfront, front left corner with this massive walk around balcony. I couldn't believe my luck when I walked in and saw the joint. You know, it's just so fantastic. And of course, as you may know, they have those biplane tours.
Yeah.
Those biplanes go past our window.
Oh my god!
We're up so bloody high.
Yeah.
And they're doing the pass over the water and the beach at Broadbeach or up heading up to surface, and it'd be this like, you know, right past the window. Bloody hilarious, but yeah, loved it.
Who are you doing breakfast with there?
That was Sukey Mead.
Oh wow, yeah.
My dear friend Suk. Suk and I are still friends today, and I mean, look, we had a great, great time because you know, when you do breakfast with somebody and you get along, it's really, really helpful. And we would often catch up in the afternoon, you know. She'd say, "Come over and get on it," you know. So, so you know, we'd have a couple of sips in the afternoon, a couple of cocktails, a few laughs, talk about the day, and yeah, it was a great, it was a really good environment. You know, I like, I love working with her, and I'm, as I say, still friends with Suk today, and a lot of good memories, mate. A lot of good memories.
I was going to say, it must have made a pretty big impression because you ended up doing 92.9 Perth for 10 solid years on breakfast, Perth's number one FM breakfast radio show. Wow.
Well, it wasn't always number one, but it was number one a bit.
Yeah.
Perth was excellent, and I've got family in Perth, which motivated me because when I was in on the Gold Coast, Greg Smith and Dave Charles came and had a chat, and I said I want to go to Perth, and Greg said, "What do you want to go to Perth for?" I said, "Well, you know, I got family over there, and I don't want to do all the rat racy stuff in Sydney." And so he said, "I get your gig in Sydney. Melbourne, what do you want to do?" I said, "No, I want to go to Perth." And so he tried to talk me out of it. I ended up going over there, and I did, as I say, I had family over there, and that was really part of the motivation. And to have rekindled with that sort of lost connection that we had, because I grew up in Melbourne, they grew up in Perth, never the twain shall meet, because, you know, back when we didn't have any money when we were kids, you didn't fly in an aeroplane or anything like that.
No,
it was all,
you know, no way.
Out of touch. So, yeah, it was great.
Who are you on air with? Was it Gary Shannon then?
I was with Shannon and Marwick and my late great friend Paul Redman,
yep,
who I did breakfast with. I put on air for the first time at the Eagle in 1990. Him and I did the show for about 3 weeks back then. But fast forwarding to now, to the Perth gig, Paul was retiring from it, leaving the station, and so we kept him on for a few months doing street stuff. And then he kind of blended, you know, he faded out of the station. And I stayed on there with Gary and Jane until 2001 or the end of 2000 when Zara and Troy joined.
Oh, yep.
And that was a different chemistry. We were famously good on air and possibly not famously good off air. It was just a different you know, we're on different paths. And so we spent a few years together, and then I had a crack at either the show myself under a Sally Rope and Luke Boland did the show with me then. And you know, I must admit, what happened to me was I lost interest in it because it became really heavily organized. The show became, the shows became very, I don't know, it was taxing. You would put up on a, you put a whiteboard up and you would say, okay, next 2 weeks shows, let's map them out.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? You know, you just done the show, you know, the first thing you want to be doing is mapping out two more weeks of shows. So you would do that every Monday, and you would literally pick out phone topics to place in the shows. In other words, any spontaneity had to be manufactured. And
yeah, okay.
I don't work like that. I don't work well like that. I'm a creative, you know, and I'm not administrative like that. And so it really clashed with me. And I thought we did, you know, the phone topic scenario has got a little inane for me, you know, what's in your glove box, all that sort of crap. And I started to drift away. My wife is Californian, and we were talking about living in the United States. And so we thought, you know what, why don't we do it now? Why don't I just bolt? And they just re-signed me, but they had taken me off the show and put on Emma Ruciano.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Michael Whipfully, Whipper.
Yeah.
And a guy called Ollie, I think his name was. I don't think Ollie ended up anywhere. I think he might have gone back to England. But, yeah, so obviously M and Whip went on to other things. But I would just do crazy calls for the first couple of months of that year, and, you know, I just wasn't enjoying it. I didn't want to stay there. They just wanted to keep me on so they didn't have to pay me out, I guess. But
In
the end, I said, you know, come on, cough it up, let's go. So they paid me out, and off we went to the United States in 2007.
Wow, what an adventure, Bertie Britton. I'm very impressed with this story. This is one I've been waiting for a long time. I've heard bits and pieces about your career, cross paths, talking about, you know, your career weaving in with other people in the podcast. So it's good to finally hear your story, Bernie. So thank you so much for joining us on the Radio Fanboy podcast.
Lee, it has been an absolute pleasure, and thank you very much.
Like the Radio Fanboy podcast? Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or visit leebevington.com.au. Lee Bevington Media, voiceovers and on-air talent for radio, television, and podcasts.